Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming to our panel. I'm Raina Kumra, and I will introduce you to this strange creature here soon and with very thoroughly. But this is Iranian Outlaws, Satire versus Censorship. And I'd like to start with a little bit of research that I picked up from Ethan Zuckerman from the Berkman Center at Harvard. And he said that one of the clearest differences between Web 1.0 and Web 2.0 is that we have so much power to put up cute photos of cats. And we do. And I think it's a huge sign of success. It is one of the most powerful uses. And it shows you that this is a free and open system. You can put up any image. You can put up any message. You can chase it down. And it is a true sign of a free internet and a free society. Participatory media creates these signals that show you that certain things are working within that system. So cute cats are a sign of that. Porn is a sign of success. Activism is. And satire definitely is. So what happens on the other side of the internet, the dark side of the internet? What happens when you're not allowed to tweet a complaint about your electricity bill or even say anything humorous about your president? What happens to the 30% of the world where you have no ability to do this? And if you do report or speak up, you face heavy penalties. You are jailed, you are gagged, and sometimes you are killed. Last year, Iran was by far the world's most active jailer of journalists, with 42 behind bars, far outstripping Eritrea with 28 jailed, China with 27, and Burma with 12. 2.1 billion people on this planet are affected by censorship today. So this is the world that I came from. I worked and played in advertising, in digital advertising, having fun with media for selling fun things to fun people. And I never really thought about the other side of the internet. It wasn't something I worried about. It wasn't something that was on my mind. And I think, like many of you, it's not something that you experience. Censorship isn't a daily occurrence. And I came to this job at the Broadcasting Board of Governors as Director of Innovation, looking at this side of the internet again and thinking, wow, this is actually really, really phenomenally interesting. How are we going to get messages through societies where the governments are blocking us and rhetoric is going crazy? So I looked at this job very seriously and I said, okay, I'm going to leave behind my creative, fun past and I'm going to be really serious. I'm going to have an adult job. And then I thought, okay, this is maybe not the right way. Until I met Salman. And Salman Arbabi is one half of the creative force behind Parasite. And I started to see that the work that they were doing is amazing, because creativity is the core of everything that they do in touch, and it is exactly why they have been so successful in the work they're doing in Iran. And it's the exact way to get through any closed system. Iran is starting a halal internet. It's an internet of purity, of just Iranian messages to Iranian people. And they've broken through that, and they're continually breaking through that. So Parasite is a product of the revolution and the people behind it. They're direct descendants of the counterculture movements that have made our society what it is today. And I would like to show you a little bit about the work, I think, the best work that's being done in this field today.
Salman Arbabi, Sadaya Amrika, Gahire.
This ain't the first time.
Basically, we put down what we really thought we would enjoy doing.
It's the Mar Arbabi. Gentlemen, what is this? Parasite, a satirical news show that broadcasts in Iran.
No, this kind of thing doesn't happen either.
Spend all your time.
Cubicle. I just want to tell you, you're like our show, but with real guts. And I'm proud to be considered in the fraternity of humorists that you guys are in.
Can you believe this?
And, and I'm honored to have you on the show.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Saman Arbabi, the creative force behind Parasite and a penetrator of closed societies.
Thank you, Raina. This is why I have to eat a lot of Tums and drink a lot of this. The expectations. Cool intro. Thank you. Thank you all for coming. I rehearsed one time, so I'm ready to do this. But a lot of you guys don't know me, so I'm going to start by giving a quick intro about myself and my life. Who is I? Okay, yesterday was my birthday. I'm 39 years old, born in Iran, upper middle class family, mom and dad, academic kind of, you know, couple. They met in at work. Mom's a biologist, dad was a chemist. So then I popped in 1973. And I thought I'd put one of these pictures up there because we're talking about censorship today, so without nudity, we can't do this. So this is the first time I'm doing this. I had a really normal upbringing. A lot of you guys don't know what Iran used to be like before 1979, but it was actually a normal country. This is me when I'm 3 years old, went to Sesame Street school. I actually got kicked out at the age of three from school for not listening to my teachers. But this is me during Halloween, and I think I'm passing out some digits to somebody I don't know. And then by the time I was 4 years old, I came from a pretty decent family, so I was lucky enough to travel. And if you guys remember back in the day, this is actually West Berlin. You couldn't go to the east side of Berlin, but this is the only picture I have from West Berlin in a zoo. Plus, the lion looked cool. I thought maybe I'd bring it in. So yeah, we had a monarchy. That was the system back then. If you haven't seen a king and stuff, but that's how they look like. That's what they look like back then. They have like a cape, a shawl, and a cane. They walked around looking like that. And you know, the Shah was a dictator, but at the time, Iran had a lot of social freedoms. What it didn't have was definitely political freedoms, and that was one of the biggest problems. And that's what happened in 1979. We had this guy. The Iranian Revolution wasn't actually supposed to be an Islamic revolution. It was a popular uprising. You had the communists, the seculars, the Democrats. You had everyone involved, millions of people. However, these guys had the guns, and they pretty much hijacked the revolution. And what worse than that was, you know, taking the hostages. So this is pretty much the image most people have in their minds about Iran, and they don't remember anything about Iran before. Iran before that was a normal country. They gave us visas. They don't do that anymore. That's how I went to West Berlin, you know. And very quickly, in 1980, I was 8 years old. Saddam, you know, saw an opportunity. Khomeini had basically completely destroyed the military. He either locked them up or executed all the generals and the military personnel. So Saddam thought, okay, here's the time. I jump in, and with the support of 29 countries, he attacked Iran, used chemical weapons and biological weapons to kill a lot of people. I think between the two countries, Iran lost about 1 million people, Iranians and Iraqis, of course. Iranians paid the highest price. We lost more people, but a lot of kids died. A lot of, you know, every time you have a foreign invasion, if you have a war, the country comes together, and that was one of the major things that actually kept Khomeini in power and the Islamic Republic that you see today. So my mom, you know, had two choices. I was 12 years old. She thought, okay, I either get out of here with my son, or I have one more month to retire, and she decided to get out, because by the age of 13, boys couldn't leave the country anymore. It was wartime. They wanted to keep all the boys in the country to serve military at the age of 18, or if they wanted to volunteer, they could have volunteered before. So I came to U.S. I lived in Paris for a little while, and then I came to the United States, Valentine's Day 1986, and I grew up like a normal kid. I was a big Turpin fan, still love him. You guys remember Lynn Bias, anyone? There you go. Yeah, I was a huge Bias fan, cried when he died. hit the wrong key. Played football. I was a huge Redskins fan. We're not going to talk about the Skins anymore because it's just nothing to talk about right now, but I was feeling them back in the day. And then I went to a Catholic school. Got accepted to Marymount University. It was like 86% girls, and we had to kind of fit in. This is my best friend, Alex. My mom saw this picture, and I can't tell you how worried she was for a while. But I'm glad to tell you, Alex has two kids. I'm also married. My wife's over there. So things went okay, but I got kicked out. So this was the second time I got kicked out of school. Clearly, I wasn't going to class. And then I got a really odd job. I became the kitchen supervisor at Hooters. Now, a lot of you guys think, like, girls get discovered at Hooters, but that's not true. I was actually discovered at Hooters. We had this little guy who came to Hooters, and for some reason, he was always looking at me. I don't know why. For a while, I was worried, but then he seemed innocent. Till one day, he called me. He's like, look, I'm a producer for this really big radio show in D.C. It's called Diamond in the Morning Show. He's trying to impress me. I think you should be my intern. And I'm like, dude, I don't even know what you're talking about. He's like, you know, I've been looking at you for a while. I'm like, yeah, I've noticed. But I think you should come and check it out. And if you want to, you know, come and work for me, you're more than welcome. So I was a biology major up to that point till he invited me. I went to ABC Studios, worked there for 3-4 days. And I'm like, wow, this is cool. I found media. And I fell in love with radio and everything with it. So within 10 years, I became like a serious war correspondent. Let me go back to this. This is kind of cool. So I started doing, like, real news. My first assignment was Afghanistan. I jumped on it very quickly. And then I went to Iraq, Lebanon, Syria, Israel. Covered pretty much Egypt, Bahrain, all the hot spots you can imagine. And went back and forth. Luckily, I didn't go for long periods of time, but the longest was, like, a month. So I started doing journalism. But there was always, like, a secret thing behind me that no one knew about that I was secretly doing. VOA didn't even know about it, and that was drawing political cartoons. So it seems a little bit odd and weird and sick, but I was actually doing political cartoons without telling anyone, and I was spreading around on the internet, and I had become like my own little Banksy within the Iranian community, and no one even knew who the hell I was. And the cartoons just started spreading around. I, for some reason, found humor, and it just, to me, it was more real than journalism. It was more objective, it was more transparent, it was more true, it was more down to earth, and I just continued using humor to pick on things. So, if you pick on one religion, why not pick them all? Just gonna go through these without really talking much about it. So these things just started spreading around. I was asking serious questions. You know, this is a valid question. And if you didn't know the answer to it, I actually had to look it up and find out. You got to start all over again. It's canceled. You got to start all over. So you can't cut the cheese while you're praying. This is a fact. So question sexuality, women's rights, issues like that, important issues, even anal sex. Nothing's, you know, sacred. And then I wondered what, like, an all-women's beach would look like in Iran. Because I had heard that, you know, it's segregated. Women swim on one part, men are on the other side. I'm like, what the hell would that look like? I mean, these are real people. They're just forced to wear, like, a hijab. But the activities are normal. What would it look like if we had, like, a female Michael Jordan in Iran? How would she dunk? And how would, like, one of these crazy mullahs get up in the morning and have breakfast and say goodbye to his wife and go out and do stuff? Just, oh, this one, I shouldn't probably put this up there. But, I mean, it's a valid question, you know? These are people, real issues. And then we had the Afghanistan issue, 9/11, the war. And it started fucking with me. I'm like, what's going on with these people? Why is the whole world going down the toilet? And then what if one of these people is missing? How do we find them? Like, I've seen a lot of these. How do I know which one's what? And what kind of book these kids read in Pakistan? What are they thinking? Why would you get in the freaking plane and just run it into a goddamn building? What's wrong with you? And the hypocrisy behind things. I know a lot of Muslims, and they're the best gamblers and one of the most professional alcoholics I've ever met in my life. If you ever want to go to Vegas, pick a Muslim. They're beasts. And then the kids in Palestine, you know, before they're even born, it's pretty much like, you know, decided for them. Arts, entertainment. So these are the stupid questions. But I was spreading them. I was using internet. I was using the internet. I was sending this stuff out. I wasn't putting my name. I just put my first name. No one knew what's going on until these things started coming back to me. I realized I'm doing something because people are writing them back. This was a big one. I should have sent this to Bush before he invaded Iraq because it was so clear that he was definitely not doing the right thing. So anyway, cartooning. I always went back to humor. Humor to me was a big deal. Try to act cool. You know, I had that cool picture in Lebanon during the war. I'm like, yeah, look at me. I'm a beast carrying a camera. Yeah, fuck you. Look at the buildings behind me. But it always brought me back to satire. And then we had 2009 elections in Iran. So I'm going to play a clip and try to talk over it. For those of you who don't know, in 2009, the Iranians had four candidates to pick from. Iranian system's like a theocracy. It's like confused between democracy and just straight-up dictatorship. We had four candidates, all picked by the parliament inside Iran, who are supported by the supreme leader and his guardian council of guardians. And even that didn't work out. During the elections, shit hit the fan. They cheated. People went in the streets. This is way before the Arab Spring. And they started protesting. And nobody had seen this since like 1979. The only difference was these kids were doing it non-violently. It was completely peaceful. And they were just asking for their votes to be counted again and for the government to listen to their voice. Instead, the government just went crazy and started beating the crap out of these kids. Instead of the Ayatollah Khamenei to say, I've heard your voice, I'll look into it, I hear you guys, he sent out these monsters to beat the crap out of these people. It looks exactly like what we saw in Egypt, Bahrain, and other countries. So at this point, all Iranians were going crazy. We're like, we got to be involved with this thing. This is a global issue. This is something very loud. They kicked the journalists out. These videos were coming out of people's iPhones, not iPhones, but cell phones and YouTube and stuff like that. And they were feeding it back to us. They wanted the whole world to see what's going on and hear their voice. Even the votes were like in English. Where's my vote? It was clearly being sent to us so we could pay attention and see what's going on. Watch this little brave girl right here. She's about to get beat up. She gets right back up. By the way, Iranian women, stay away. They got massive balls. So yeah, they just start running over people with cars and just beating the crap out of people. I love this video. Watch what happens to these cops. They get one of these guys and then a group of people that are like, uh-uh, we're not taking this. That's beautiful. So I missed that. I was like, man, I can't go back to Iran. This is fucked up. I really want to be there. This is my generation. These are my friends. I got to be part of this. So it's looping again. But that's when the whole idea came back with the whole humor thing. We're like, okay, let's put a show together called Parazit. Parazit in English is static, TV static. And it's what the Iranian government does to jam signals from the shows being broadcasted from outside. Then I found this other crazy guy at work who was feeling the same. And together we put a show. We started writing this crazy idea. VOA had never seen anything like this. They're like, meh. Okay, go ahead, make it a segment. It's not going to fly. We put a 10-minute segment together called Parazit, and it became the biggest thing at VOA. How do we do it? Again, humor. The first thing we did was make fun of ourselves. We found it disarming when you use humor, because if you can make fun of yourself and your opponent, then people are more receptive to what you have to say. And we started using humor.
Democracy. برابری جامعه مدنی پاسخها در کدام دالان و نزد چه کسی است
کی من
کی این
Basically, we're like, if you're looking for hope, we're the last two people who's going to do anything. You're not going to get it here. But let's show you what the news is. So our show very quickly became a huge internet thing. People had no idea it's being broadcasted out of VOA. They had no idea where it's coming from. It had no face. It was just a bunch of videos produced by us, sent by our fans, sent by the people in Iran. But it sounded different. It was pissed off. It was funny and it was angry. And what we did was we basically took the videos that people were sending us because there were no foreign journalists inside Iran. They were looking for us to broadcast this stuff. We'd gather everything we get in a week, add our own little flavor to it, which made a huge connection with the people in Iran, and rebroadcasted the news. So we made citizen journalism look cool. People were sending us more videos, more pictures, more articles. They were letting us know what's going on because we became their voice. And we were angry. They were angry. And the reason we tapped into the right audience was because these are our guys. They were like my age. They're like my coworkers' age. They just wanted the right. They wanted their basic rights. They wanted the same little things that you and I want. Mostly young, very young people. Again, everything was in English. They wanted you to hear what they have to say, and the whole world was watching. And then this picture is kind of special because this kid's name is Mohammad Mukhtari. He was a huge fan of ours. He commented on our shows. He spread the show. He linked it with everyone. Anyway, he died a year ago. So for the first time, it was kind of weird. He got shot in the head by the police. It was the first time you could actually see a face of one of the people you're kind of like talking to, and they're talking back at you. So that was like a touching moment. We actually dedicated one of the shows to him. And I think about a year and a month ago was his death. Anyway, the reason we became very successful and very popular is mainly because of this. 70% of Iranians are under the age of 30. Only 5% are over 65, and that 5% is telling the other 70% what to think and what to do. The reason there's a huge generation gap here is because during the 1980-88 war between Iran and Iraq, a lot of people died. Every time you have a war, you have a huge generation gap. So that almost a decade of just brutal beating and killing created this generation gap, which is actually good for us. They're extremely web savvy. Iran's the third or fourth largest country in the world when it comes to blogging. And they really rely on the internet. 70% of Iranians are more savvy than you and I are when it comes to the internet. And then we used it. I started using my own little propaganda posters and stickers and stuff like that. Started posting it on the websites. And each one of these was getting like over a million hits at a time. I don't know how many times it got shared or printed or whatever, but we used it. We kept using it. And we used the internet to do our own little propaganda stuff. That's Ahmadinejad down there. So yeah, people would send us pictures. I'd put it in Photoshop. Boom, here's our commercial for us, and people would love it. They'd pass it around. So we were promoting the show, and we were expressing the same anger and need that the kids in Iran had. I'd take anything up there. Look at that. That's some nasty, filthy stuff. But it was cool. So we made we empowered people. We made them feel like they have an ownership to this show. They felt like they're part of this show. This show is them. They're driving it by doing these things. Good, cool production, their footage, and their kind of language used in the stories that we told. Not knowing, we're actually creating jobs, because our DVDs and our digital files became a huge bootleg market inside Iran. I think, if I'm not mistaken, each DVD sold for about $20 inside right now. So we're good for the economy. Internet cafes became more expensive at the time when our show was on the air, because people don't have fast connections, except if you go to an internet shop, internet cafe, and between, what time is our show? Midnight? 11 to 12. The rates are actually higher because of our show. So we started creating jobs. And Iran's one of the most polluted cities in the world. It's got, I think, 14 million people, and everyone's got a car. And this is what it looks like during the day, except for Fridays when the show's on. It's beautiful. You think I'm kidding, but I've heard in many, many, many places that the traffic dies completely. And the only thing I can compare it to is when O.J. Simpson's trial was almost over, the last day. There was nobody on the street. And I was one of those guys who was driving home very quick to see what's going on. So that's when the Iranian cyber army started to hit us back. They're like, okay, we hear you, and here we are. They started hacking us, sending these stupid messages. And what do? We recycled our cyber garbage and put it back up. Anything they give us is material. It's good. So Iran uses the same technology, the same internet, the same satellite technology that we all have in the world to send out its own propaganda in English, in French, in Arabic, in Spanish, in Farsi, and I don't know how many more other languages they know, but they have offices inside the United States, in Latin America, all over the world. Press TV, if you've heard of it, it's Iranian. I think they have an office in New York and DC. But when it comes to receiving information, they jam it. So it's I don't know, it just pisses me off a little bit. When they use the same technology that we offer them, they pay for it, and they use it for their own tool and propaganda system. But when it comes to other people using it, they completely block it off. Our show got so big that they just started going commando style on us. The censorship commandos. These guys would actually go to rooftops by helicopter or by whatever force they could, and they started breaking down dishes. You think they're after bin Laden here. This is real. This is like what goes on in Iran. It was so real that it cut off. Okay. They found me. Bastards are here. So the more they started messing with us, the more popular we got. They started talking about us in articles and newspapers. This is a show that's illegal to watch. No one is supposed to even know that it exists. Meanwhile, they're writing about it in Kayhan, the state paper. And they would show clips of our show in their own television programs. So how are you watching it if you're telling people not to watch it? And our numbers started blowing up. Now, 800,000 people for a Facebook page for a big show like ours that's only been on the air for like 3.5 years, it's pretty big. But let me just tell you how big it is. Iran is a country of 74 million people. The language we produce the show is in Farsi, so it's not a big, you know, it's really just focused on Iran. And Facebook is actually banned inside Iran. So if you use a proxy or a filter breaker with a really super duper slow connection to get to Facebook, which is a pain in the ass, the last thing you want to do is go up there and say like, so the whole government can see who you are. But with all that, we're reaching about 1 million people almost. So I'm pretty impressed. I don't know if you are, but I am. This is one of my favorite pictures. One of our fans sent this picture. There are like 18 people in this photo, and they're all watching the show. I don't know how many Iranians you know, but you can't get three of them in one room and have them like agree on one simple thing. They're actually sitting there quiet. There are 18 of them. There's food on the freaking thing. They're drinking tea. One dude's like 70 years old, and there's like a girl that's like maybe 12, I don't know, 10. So that's pretty impressive. I'm very happy we could do that. Going back to Parazit and Static. What Iranians are doing now in the country, it's called intelligent jamming now. So they used to actually just randomly try to send out these signals to jam the TV signals, but now they really focus on our show. So you could see VOA all day, but then when it comes to our show, it's like this.
مشاور ارشد مهدی کروبی که دو روز پیش از انتخابات ریاست جمهوری از ایران اومد بیرون و همکنون در کشور
بله این برنامه پارازیت هفته گذشته بود یکی از ایران ضبط کرده فرستاد این چه کاری آخه برادر من از چی میترسی مرد سام سامان این کانال رو عوض کن برو یورو نیوز مثلا
شما تصرف
سو دیس از یورو نیوز دی ورن واچینگ یورو نیوز
سلام میرم به موزه پیکاسو که هنرمند دوره از زندگیش را در این شهر گذرانده و مجذوب زیبایی
از این نمیترسی بعد از این میترسی سامو نشون بده دوباره
بخش دیگر به آثار مربوط
فقط چند وقت
So that's why we're very happy that there are a lot of young Iranians inside sharing our thoughts. Oh, you weren't supposed to see this, sorry. Anyway, with all this madness, our show still gets there. And even if they watch it with like a week delay, our show is still there. We're making a presence and we're using the internet to do it. That's the only way we can get inside Iran. That's the only way they can send us stuff. So just to show you what the show's all about, in a very quick clip, this is it.
سلام من کامبیز حسینی هستم و این پارازیت هست برنامه پلید در حد تیم ملی ایران از طرف بچه های انقلاب که حالا شدن مزدوران در قلب آب خود فروخته ی عامل بیگانه دشمن ملت ایران برای شستشوی مغزی ایرانیان و فروپاشی خانواده های ایرانی از طرف پروپاگاندای تهاجم فرهنگی شیطان بزرگ برای بست استکبار در کشور اسلامی محمود احمدی نژاد گفت تفکیک جنسیتی در دانشگاه‌ها آلمانه نیست و ما میگیم باز نزدیک انتخابات شد مردم فریبید چسبید به سقف لبنیات در ایران 10-15% گرون شد و اینکه دیگه جونم براتون بگه اتفاق خاصی نیفتاد هفته پیش فقط یه 20 نفر دیگه تو زندون وکیل‌آباد اعدام شدن همه همکاری‌ها با موزه لوور پاریس منحل شد
سازمان میراث فرهنگی هیچ گونه همکاری با موزه دوبر فرانسه نخواهد داشت تحت هیچ عنوان تحت هیچ شکل
موزه است فرهنگ توشه فلان با اونم شما مشکل داری؟ با موزه لوور پاریس چه مشکلی داری؟ من نمیدونم ها؟
مونالیزه حجاب نداره
بینندگان عزیز خوش آمدید به برنامه ما امروز دوباره من امروز میخوام طرز تهیه آش قوه قضاییه که هر روز به شما میده رو به شما یاد بدم که هر وقت خودتون خواستین در منزل خودتون با فک و فامیلتون بتونین این آش رو درست بکنین
مواد لازم برای درست کردن این آش برای 73 تا 80 میلیون نفر شکنجه این هوا فه 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 شلاق بالای 70 ضربه البته من خودم ترجیح میدم این کابلای برقای دیشایی که خودم مصادره کردم استفاده کنم سنگ برای میزان کافی سنگسار 3 تا 5 نفر در سال داروی نظافت یک قاشق چایخوری بسته شوی 2-3 تا کفکرگی مشت لگت و دو تا آپرکات اگه البته این دو تا رو نداشتین یک چوتان سوتیگی
حالا 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 همه دستو به
I used to be a serious journalist, I swear to you.
هفته گذشته سرانجام پس از 2 سال از حادثه کهریزک که دل آقا را خون کرده بود، سعید مرتضوی گفت حاشیه سازی نکنید چون ما تبرئه شدیم. البته ایشون لطف کردند، با خانواده های جان باختگان همدردی کردند تا دل آقا از خون درآید. بانک مرکزی یک نظرسنجی برگزار کرده برای تغییر نام ریال. بیشترین رأی رو تا حالا به پارسی دادند. یعنی اینا خیال میکنند اگه اسم پول رو عوض کنند اقتصادم عوض میشه، غافل از این که چه ریال چه پارسی هنوز در این قضیه پاپاسی.
حالا اگه فوتبال ایران فیلم هندیه، به نظر شما آقای کفاشیان رئیس فدراسیون کیه؟ یعنی چه شخصیتیه توی این فیلم هندی؟
بیا بیا جلوتر، مطمئنم تو حالا عشق چشمی مرده رو ندیدی. بیا گریه مرگ رو ببین. در این سن کم مرگ به زندگی غالب نمیشه. آرزوهای اون از دست رفت. آینده همه این بچه هست که از دست رفته، آینده اونا رو تو طراحی کردی. زندگی اونا پر از خارای سخته، همینطورم پر از گل. تو به اونا یاد داری با ریشه‌کن کردن درخت آینده رو نابود کنن.
هی مولی، تو جلوی همه الان گفتی من مسئول مرگ اونم، ها؟ تو اشتباه میکنی. بهش بگیم بگیم دیگه بگیم بگیم بگو بگو.
Sorry, I'm gonna cut it off because of how much time we have? 15. Oh, Jesus. Okay. So anyway, there's more where that came from. But anyway, if one wasn't enough, we just came out with a second show. There's another part, is the part two with a bigger T. That's what this new logo is, because 30 minutes wasn't enough, so we're coming out with 60 minutes. I'm going to rush this a little bit. And these are the guys behind it. The Iranian government is afraid of these guys. We're talking about that guy with the turban and these guys. This is how, like, they think the government's going to go down. That brings us to the world's biggest dicks. If we can pick on one dick, if I can pick on one dick, and you just saw a naked picture of me with that thing over there, but if I can pick on one of these guys, why not pick on all of them? What? Let me go back to that. One thing that brings all these dicks together is, for one thing, they all have penises. I've never met a single dictator that has a vagina. They're all men. For some reason. And they're all weird men. I don't know what's wrong with them, but they're totally insecure and paranoid about something, clearly. I don't know what that is. Especially this North Korean thing is just freaking weird, man. North Korea is out there. So here's our intro video for this part.
Than any other time in history, the aggressive hand of government internet censorship aims to suppress people's progress around the world. Today, over 2.5 billion have access to the internet, a number that has more than doubled in the past 5 years. But 2.1 billion directly live under internet censorship. Online freedom of expression and access to information is a fundamental human right. Governments engage in oppression 2.0 by monitoring, blocking, and filtering content, and through fear and intimidation, they silence the voices of their people. But in the age of information and transparency, the world is watching. Citizen journalism journalism and digital media gave us all a front row seat to the 2009 Iranian uprising and to the people's movements that swept the Arab world over the past year, solidifying the vital importance of free flows of communication, especially in countries that are culprits of repressive censorship. From the streets of Tehran to the greens of Tahrir Square, from rallies in Moscow to the heart of the U.S. Occupy movements, people around the world are empowered by the internet to mobilize, to show solidarity, to expose unknown realities on the ground, and to share their stories with the world in ways that have forever changed the course of history. As Egyptian activist Wael Ghanim famously said in 2011,
if you want to free a society, just give them internet access.
While incredible developments in technology have empowered people across generations to break down borders and communicate, authoritarian regimes also use technology for pervasive surveillance used to pinpoint and punish dissent. So what does government internet censorship actually look like? China, the great firewall of China. China is home to 500 million internet users, the world's biggest online and censored population. Blocked content includes basics like
democracy, human rights, Tiananmen Square, Arab Spring.
Some Chinese aren't even aware of what happened in Tiananmen Square. So many are behind bars for online activity. Member strong cyber police, including the animated Jing Jing and Cha Cha. Iran, control 2.0 without bounds. 30 million out of 72 million Iranians use the internet, but most content is blocked, monitored, filtered, and jammed. Iran demonizes the internet as serving, quote, foreign enemy interests. They've invested $1 billion to launch a pure or halal national intranet to further isolate its people. Iran is second in the world in imprisoning activists. North Korea. Internet? What is the internet? North Korea is the most stark example of a virtual black hole. Access to the internet is not even an option unless you are part of the most elite within the nation's government. Around the world, government presence is known. It's pervasive and it's feared. But sparks still fly. People still connect. They circumvent. They fight. They show creative innovation in the face of brutal censorship. And with every mouse click, they push the boundaries and break down the walls built by their governments.
So here's the art project. Okay, I'm going to go down this because we don't have much time. How much time do we have? Do we have time? Okay, so I might just skip through these very quickly, but these are some of the what-the-fuck moments around the world. Like in Burma, two death sentences for just sending out email documents. They're not like top-secret documents. These are just documents. It could be anything. It could be like whatever. China's one of the worst ones. I'm going to go through them quick without reading them because we got 9 minutes. There's more videos. And they got these two. Apparently, I'm not the only one who likes cartoons. This guy likes cartoons, too. He's got these weird Jing Jing Cha Cha characters that if I had named them like this, you'd call me a racist. Cuba's a weirdo. Freaking, till 2008, you couldn't have a computer. It was illegal to have a computer. To have a computer. To play like Solidaire. Like, was that game, Solidaire? The stupid game that all government employees play? And then this guy, his father killed like 20 to 40,000 people in one weekend alone. And he's doing it again all over now. The only difference is when he doesn't want to deal with the internet, so he just unplugs everything and people are powerless, so they can't use anything. And in North Korea, the weirdest country ever. I actually think Korea is a freaking myth.
Oh,
주체 혁명 역을 끝까지 완성해 나갈 결의에 넘쳐 있습니다.
어떻게 보면 더 옮겼습니까? 우리 장군님께서는 일상 1분 1초도 있을 수 없어요. 우리 민들을 위해서 밤낮 헤아리고 댕기죠. 정말 저 차 안에서 쪽장을 주무시고 죄기 밥으로 끼니리 오면서 우리 민들을 위해서 그러던
last minute humor. This is what Korea looks like at night. It's not there. I'm telling you, it's a fake country. Have you ever met a North Korean? Have you ever gone to school with a North Korean? How many Koreans do we have here? Apparently, there's no South Korea either. What the hell? So I went online and actually found they have a website. It looks like this. It's like something I would make in 1984. And there's like a tourism part. So clearly, I had to sign on. That's the first thing they want. They want your information. Which idiot would do that? I did it. I used George Bush's name, but I did it. And then I found that they have two trips to North Korea. And they were fully booked. Both trips are fully booked. Why? Because they only take 30 people at a time. And if you're lucky enough to get there, you wear a blue band on your arm right here, and you're escorted around with military dudes. You take really cool pictures. They're having a blast. This is North Korea. And they put a little watermark down there so South Koreans wouldn't steal it and say, this is all the fun you can have in South Korea. This is a real country. Forced labor. They make you make food. Shitty art. Who hasn't seen one of these things in like Ocean City, Maryland? This is their museum. Freaking lions. Spray painted. And then this is a museum again. They put food in their museum. Say, we have food. Look what the other guy made, the other tourist. And this guy's job is to just sit there and pretend like he's using a computer. It's one of those IKEA things. You can pick it up. It's like cardboard, I bet. And then if you're a good guy, they actually let you sign someone's death warrant. And if your handwriting is nice, you can kill him. This is North Korea. This is if you didn't have internet, what would have happened in the United States or Canada? Evicted out of my apartment. This was our shot in the lobby. So I'm speeding up. Back to the dicks. If I can pick on these dicks, anyone else can pick on these dicks. If my team of seven, one of them's right over there. Come on, get up. Get up. Roya Sherbinet, get up, get up. If we can seriously pick on Ayatollah Khamenei, then so can the rest of the freaking world. These guys are a bunch of idiots. We can totally get on these guys. They write articles about us. They try to make us look like crazy people, but we know who they are. And this is the art project.
Weapons of Mass Destruction, the largest global art project against government internet censorship. Through art, we will expose the aggressive tactics employed by governments like China, Iran, and Syria. Show solidarity and stand up to these governments. Take a picture. Download our mobile app and make a bold statement. Transform an art project into a global movement that will impact the lives of millions of people. Donate to Kickstarter. Take this project to the next phase. Tell your friends. Join us and become a weapon of mass destruction. Together, we can destroy censorship, one mouse at a time.
So Parazit brought us here. The artwork's by Shepard Fairey. I want to give him mad respect because he's the coolest dude on earth. And anytime anything like this happens, he's on board. Our website is www. How many W's was that? Wait, yeah, we got three of them. Weapons of Mouse Destruction. It's up there running. I heard it crashed earlier today, so it's a very good news. A lot of people are hearing about it. Our project, I'm rushing. Okay, we're trying to raise awareness. Because if we don't speak up, if we don't bring enough people involved to hear what the hell is really going on out there, we can't make the policy changes we need to make. We can't hold these corporates responsible for some of this technology stuff that they're passing around to countries like Iran and Syria. This is like our tax money going to some of these companies that are doing certain things. I don't want to name them. I don't want to tell you who they are. But they do certain things that Google realized after a while in China and pulled out. And there's a lot more of that going on. And there's a lot of technology out there. There's a lot of government responsibility behind this that's totally being ignored unless we talk about it and raise the issue. So we have this art project where we want people to come online and upload their picture doing exactly what you see up there. And we have several phases that I don't want to get into right now, unless you have some questions, that's going to make this art project hopefully a really big global project that we're looking forward to. I think I'm out of time, and I think I totally rushed the whole art project thing. So if you have questions, we launched today. Yeah, this is the launch, so you're the launch. Thank you. I should have talked more about the art than Parazit, but sorry. Censorship. I knew it. We talk about this. Okay.
We take questions.
Meet in the hallway. Check out the site. Okay. Semi-censorship. Okay. I'm here. You have questions, please. Good seeing you. Buy his book. He's a beast. Anything anyone can do is really good. What we can do with our team of six or seven right now is 30 minutes a week. And it's a lot of work. So we work nonstop. I eat a lot of Tums and drink a lot of this. And this is the best we can do. But the more people get involved with anything, the more we can do, of course. I'd love to do a show every day. We use social media, of course. But on actual satellite, it's once a week. But we're constantly in touch with people. We have sources inside, we have sources outside, and we use the social media as much as we can to inform people. And right now, our main thing is to keep social media available because Iran's spending $1 billion to create this intranet thing. You know, when George Bush said internets, he was right. There's several internets out there. It's not one. China's got one, Iran's making one, and we have one. We use Facebook and Twitter for different things, but in sensitive countries like Syria, Egypt, Iran, it's actually used for far more important things than this. We're trying to keep that alive. Yes. Format. I think everything's in your phone, okay? Telephone's becoming such an amazing thing right now. You can hear, you can see, you can send, you can receive. So, because it's got everything. You can do a video file with killer music and killer content, and you can still view it on your phone. I had a friend of mine from New York texting me one day saying, dude, I can't believe it, but the guy next to me is actually watching your show going to work right now on his iPhone. So the phone is the most powerful thing there is, and we have to keep that link going. We can't cut it off, because that's how that video stuff got out of Iran. They couldn't walk around with big cameras. It was their phones. Anyone else? Oh, go ahead. Well, no, it's not. There's a lot to cover. One thing we're really good at is feeling the pulse of our audience. We know what's important inside Iran, and we stay on that. If there's something, like, Iranians don't really care about healthcare in the United States or, like, even Israel. They care about, like, their own issues. They're worried about corruption, lack of freedom of expression, religion, minorities are having problems. So we just sift through what's going on and what's the hottest topic. Our thing is to just use common sense. Whatever's more important and doesn't make sense, we add common sense to it and we reflect it again. And there's no shortage of that. They just give us so much material every week. It's unbelievable. Now we monitor them. It used to be the videos coming from Iran, and now we actually do like what The Daily Show does. We monitor their media, and we record it, we watch it, and then we pick from it. So we're watching them. They're watching us, we're watching them. No, it's okay. It's broadcast outside of the United States. So. Type Parazit on Facebook, you'll find it, and also on YouTube. We just started adding subtitles. So I think we have 3 shows now with subtitles. And we're off the air till April 6th, so we can do this stuff and launch this big project, and then we're back on with English subtitles. So you can see us on YouTube and Facebook for sure. Thank you. Go ahead. That's a very good question. We pick on U.S. and anything that has anything to do with Iran and foreign policy or international, politics. When it comes to like the Navy calling the Persian Gulf the Arab Gulf, we talk about it. When it comes to Obama speaking a little bit too late about human rights inside Iran, we talk about it. But when it comes to like just U.S. issues, we don't talk much about it because our audience doesn't really care. They care about what's going on inside Iran. So when it comes to issues about Iran and United States or other countries, we definitely bring it up. Okay. Please visit the site. Join us. Thank you.